Welcome to Jukebox's first episode of The Duke's Discs, a podcast in which we interview members of the Wellington community and ask them to choose five songs, a book, and a luxury that they would want with them if they were to go to a desert island and be stranded on their own. I'm Ralph, and I'm joined by Harry and Max, and together we'll be hosting these shows. We wanted to start our show with a guest that plays a central role in the Wellington community, and so who better than the 15th Master himself, Mr. Dahl. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Ralph. It is an honour and a privilege to be here.
Well, we're very, very happy to have you. We wanted to start with some questions.
Yeah.
To ask about you, give a little insight to some of the students here. So first of all, what was it like being the master? Did you ever expect to be the headmaster when you first came here?
when I first came here, was actually as a schoolboy myself. I went to a boarding school around the M25 in Hertfordshire called Haileybury. And so we played rugby and cricket against Wellington. And actually the very last game of competitive sport I ever played as a schoolboy, I was in the first 11 cricket side at Haileybury, and we played Wellington away. And so I was here at the end of my upper six. I've done my A-levels and it was a two-day game. And my parents came down from Newcastle upon Tyne, where I grew up, to watch this game of cricket. And as they drove me out of the campus at the end of the game, I actually said to my mum and dad, you know what, I think I might come back here and work at Wellington one day. And lo and behold, sort of 20 years later, I was here in 2013 when I joined to be Director of Admissions. And then I did that for 5 years. I did Deputy Head Pastoral for a while. And then I was going to become Second Master when Mr. Thomas, the previous head, announced that he was moving on a little bit sooner than we thought. And one thing led to another, and I got the job. And so, Ralph, did I expect ever to be Master of Wellington College? Well, the slightly cocky 17-year-old me thought that he would be coming back and working at Wellington one day. But it is actually genuinely humbling. I didn't expect ever to end up as Master of Wellington College. But I did always want to be a head. And I don't think there is a school in the world that I'd rather be head of than Wellington College. So it is a humbling privilege to serve and lead this community.
Well, I think the slightly cocky teenager might have been right, so I'm not going to lie. Well, we're glad to have you as the master. I think I've heard a lot of students say that you're one of their favourite teachers here. So it's great to know that since you came here when you were a kid just to play sport, that now you're here being a big head of whatever. It's great. The next question, childhood aspiration. If you had to pick someone that you looked up to when you were a kid, like your kind of hero, if you know what I mean, who would that be?
Gosh, there's so many. I guess when I was growing up, I went through various stages of obsession. I wanted to become a professional sportsman at some point. So I think sort of cricketers of the age like Viv Richards and Ian Botham, I thought they were pretty cool. I've always loved my music, hence one of the reasons why we're here today. And so, you know, some of those bands and big stars of the late 80s, early 90s, some of which we'll probably come on to talk about, were you know, role models. I did quite a bit of DJing when I was younger too, which I suspect we'll come on to talk about. So some of those big names, like sort of when I was your age, it was people like Paul Oakenfold, and there was a DJ called Sasha, and people like that. And then I think growing up and moving into teaching, the biggest inspiration to me throughout my entire adult life, Ralph, is actually a chap called Sir Anthony Seldon, now, who was the 13th Master of Wellington. He was Master here from 2006 to 2015, and he actually appointed me to my first ever teaching job when I was 20 years old back in 1998. And he is just the most incredible human being, mentor, inspiration. So if I had to pick one person actually who's had the biggest influence on me in my entire life, it's not one of those childhood heroes, but it's actually Sir Anthony Seldon.
Wow. Anthony Seldon, he was the old headmaster, yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I wouldn't think that you'd say an old headmaster. I thought you'd say like a sports person or something, like Lionel Messi, you know.
Yeah.
But that's a really interesting answer.
He's an amazing man. Ralph, at some point, he has been back to Wellington since he finished, and it'd be great for you to meet him, but He was responsible for so many of the things that make Wellington such a fizzy, modern, progressive, outward-facing, innovative school that it is today. Things like Harkness teaching, the IB, going fully co-ed, and the wellbeing agenda. These were all initiatives that Sir Anthony introduced during his time here and have created this amazing school that we're all part of now. And actually, it's my responsibility moving forward to take that vision and that strategy and that agenda and say, well, let's keep doing that over the next 10 years. That's the work that I've got to do here. So it's super exciting.
Well, yeah, he sounds wonderful. And maybe I wouldn't be surprised if you could follow perfectly in his footsteps.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. next question. Did you it's a fairly similar question. Did you have an idol when you were growing up?
So an idol, so someone that you idolise, goodness me. Do you know what? I'm not sure if I did sort of pin all of my idolisation into one person. I'm very eclectic and broad in my interests in life, and I look at leaders and key figures from across so many different areas of life. So probably not one actually, Ralph, but just many. But if I had to pick one, probably Ian Botham from the England cricket team, who's pretty heroic.
Right. Well, I guess that's kind of a good thing, you know. If not having one person that you aspire to be, you kind of can be your own person. If you know what I mean.
Well, one thing that my parents taught me from a very young age, and I think it's something that I would want for all Wellingtonians here, is they made it very clear to me throughout my childhood growing up that that there was unconditional love for me and that they would support me in whoever I wanted to be in my life. And there were different moments in my childhood growing up where they thought I might try and become a professional cricketer or a professional DJ. And hey ho, I ended up as a Latin teacher. How cool is that? But do you know what? I always knew that they would support me being whoever I wanted to be. And I think I want to do that to the Wellington community as well. I think one of the really special things about this place is it gives all the girls and boys who come to school here the opportunity just to be who they are. And that's really important to me.
Well, that's wonderful. Yeah, I like what you were talking about, how the kids, the boys and girls at the school can be whatever they want. I think that's absolutely right. You can be a DJ, a cricketer, or a Latin teacher. Yeah. Possibly the most glamorous of the three.
Yeah, 100%. I think my parents are pretty proud of me choosing that way.
Exactly. Next question. If you could, as you know, the podcast is based on if you were stranded on an island, you had to pick songs or whatever. If you could be stranded anywhere in the world, anywhere, where would it be, do you think?
Oh, God, that's a really good question. So things that spring to mind. Last summer, ridiculously, in the middle of the first wave of COVID, my family and I managed to get away to Sardinia for 10 days, right when you could travel. We were so lucky. And that was really special. I've traveled a lot around Europe to the Greek islands. Being a classics teacher, I've been to Athens and Rome a lot and all of those Greek islands. That's really, really special. Sri Lanka is one of the most amazing places I've been to in my life. And I'd love to be shipwrecked there. But you know what? My wife and I went on honeymoon to America, and we went to California. And we flew out to Hawaii for 7 days, and we were on this incredible island in the north of Hawaii called Kauai. And I think that would be the place, the island of Kauai in Hawaii, in the Pacific Ocean, is amazing.
That's a very good answer, Hawaii. That'll be a very nice place to be stranded on. I like how you're saying Sardinia. I've been to Sardinia. It's amazing. It's wonderful. It's very hot.
It was very hot. And because no one was traveling back then, it was really relatively empty when we were there. So it was, amazing. I love the Italians. I love Italian culture. I love Italian music, which will feature in this. I as a classicist and someone who had a passion for Latin and Roman culture or ancient Roman culture from a young age, Italy has a very special place in my heart.
Yeah, that's understandable. Italy's a wonderful place. Next question. What is your favourite memory since arriving at Wellington? I know you've been here for a while, but
oh,
if you had to single out one
what
thing.
What a question. So many. I have some really happy memories when I was director of admissions of travelling. And actually, the favourite places I would travel to were Italy, Milan. I used to go there every year, and Hong Kong. I absolutely loved my trips to Hong Kong. Max and I first met on the third floor of the Mandarin Oriental Hotel. Yeah. Do you
remember that? Yeah,
amazing, yeah. And just a brilliant place. So vibrant, so busy. So that's it. But I think also, and it's such a shame because we weren't able to do speech day last year because obviously we were in lockdown, and we're very much hoping to do a speech day this year, but it's going to be a bit different. But actually, those very early speech days were just Wellington at its best. The community coming together, supporting each other, celebrating. Speech day should be a celebration of the achievements of the young people who come to school here. And if I had to pick one thing out, I would say speech day, a Wellington speech day done properly, are probably my happiest memories.
Wow. I hope that speech day is exactly the same this year. I know it probably can't be as glamorous as it is because of COVID, no. But I think it would. I think it might just be just as special.
Well, Ralph, fingers crossed that you will get at least four speech days that are of the old variety. Yeah. And certainly by the time you chaps are in the upper six and leaving, my goodness me, if we're still living under COVID restrictions, then I think I might give up.
Yeah, I hope so. Fingers crossed. One last question.
Yes.
If you had one piece of advice that you could tell your younger self, or one piece of advice that you wish you knew when you were younger, what would that be?
Wow. So the piece of advice that I would give myself would be, actually, and it's also a piece of advice that I would give all young people at Wellington, and it links back to something I said before, is just have the courage to be yourself at all times. A few years ago, and I know members of the Wellington community have heard me say this before, but a few years ago I heard this amazing Jewish proverb that said, if I pretend to be him, then who will be me? And it's such a powerful, simple but powerful message that, you know, there's only one you. And if you spend your childhood or your adult life trying to be something that you're not, then you will never, I think, be truly happy in life. And happiness is an interesting concept, isn't it? And when Wellington first introduced well-being lessons with Dr. Selden and Mr. Morris all those years ago, the press, the newspapers in the UK went, whoa, Wellington's gone mad introducing happiness lessons for children. And actually, for me, I think one of the keys to true happiness is to be really comfortable in who you are and in your own skin. So I would say, be yourself, which is a very famous saying, but don't pretend to be someone you're not.
Well, that's wonderful. And that's, you're exactly right. If I pretend to be you, who will be me? That's a great thing to live by, because if you pretend to be someone else, you're not being true. It's like you're almost lying to try and gain popularity or something.
That's right. It's funny, we have integrity as a college value here at Wellington, and a lot of people sort of interpret integrity about sort of, well, being truthful and honest with other people and so on and so forth. But there's self-integrity. There's integrity with yourself. And that's being true to yourself, as you say, Ralph. And sometimes you can act with great integrity with other people, but you can be lying to yourself at times. So that self-knowledge and that self-integrity is, I think, key.
I think you're exactly right. Thank you for answering those questions. I think now we're moving on to the music.
Excellent. Here we go.
Thank you. So before we recorded this show, we asked you for your five favourite pieces of music. And as you informed me over emails, you said your music taste is truly eclectic, and I, for one, can say it really is. So, Mr. Dahl, could you introduce us to your first piece?
So, right, where to begin? So I've already mentioned, Harry, today that I did ridiculously a lot of DJing when I was younger. I got into dance music probably about your age, 13, 14. And I've always been fascinated with dance and dance music and the way in which music makes you want to move your feet and move around. It is something, for me, almost primal and spiritual about it. And growing up in Newcastle upon Tyne, there was a boy at my school called Henry Smithson. And he was in the year below me, but we lived quite near to each other in Newcastle. And we started DJing together and collecting records together. And we may or may not have gone to nightclubs underage together to see DJs playing things. I don't know about that. You know, our lives went in different directions. I went to boarding school for sixth form. Henry went into professional DJing, and I became a Latin teacher, and he changed his name to Riton. And now Riton is one of the biggest names in global electronic dance music. And we grew up together in Newcastle upon Tyne, and we DJed together as 14, 15 year old boys, and we collected music together. And here I am as a headmaster of a school, and he's a world famous DJ. But this track, Ginger, is absolutely my favourite track of his. It just makes me want to move my feet and nod along to it. So my first track is Ginger by Riton.
Who has the ginger? I woke up one day and planned to get reckless. Felt myself and put on my best necklace. Posted in the group chat, who wants the 5G? They were only down for the after party. My body is ready, and it's fitting me like I have jetty jetty. Who else would be hype? Who has the ginger? Only this guy that I know through my sister. So I hit him up and told him let's roll. And he told me he'll pioneer the paroles. Now it's a movement and I can't waste. So I got some Henny at the stash for a taste. Went out for pre-drinks, world was chill. But as the time passed, got real. I mentioned a movement, they said they come through. Now them two are ready to do the do. The whole squad turned and the music is flames. And we don't even know anybody here's names. Came front, I have no regrets. Loki, one of my best nights yet. Ooh, I'm on a big wave. Everybody around me pulling the same. Nothing can phase me now. Who has the ginger?
For our viewers out there who don't know who Riton or Carlo was before this, let me just say that they are phenomenal, and the pair were nominated for a Grammy for one of their other hits, Rinse and Repeat. Yep. And so, Mr. Dahl, personally, that's quite an insane feat to be able to say you were one of the original, almost, in a way, allies with Riton working together. That is such an incredible thing.
It's utterly bizarre. So I haven't seen Henry for 25 to 30 years, but at some point I'm going to reach out and see if I can get him to Wellington to come do a set.
Well, Riton, if you hear this, that would be great. Our second song, I'd never heard this before.
You wouldn't have done that.
No, this song was originally released on vinyl, and it was one of three tracks on the disc. But apart from that, there's not much known about this song anywhere on the internet or anywhere.
No.
So could you tell us what this song is and how you came across it?
Yeah, 100%. So at the same time as sort of becoming increasingly interested in and obsessed by dance music as a teenager, I was also absolutely part of this growing scene of music, which was known as the Manchester scene at the time. And it was bands like the Happy Mondays, the Inspiral Carpets, the Stone Roses, who we'll come to in a little bit as well. But there was a band that came out of Leeds University, called Cud. C-U-D, Cud, is in the cow that chews the cud. And I became absolutely obsessed by this band, as were a couple of my friends at school. And they came to prominence through, he's not alive anymore, but there was a very famous DJ on Radio 1 called John Peel. Not a DJ as in like a dance music DJ, but sort of alternative music DJ, sort of rock, indie music. And they did a cover of You Sexy Thing by Hot Chocolate on John Peel on the Peel Sessions. And I became obsessed by Cud. And this is the opening track on one of their albums. And it's called Slack Time. And I was in a number of bands as a teenager growing up, as well as trying my hand at DJing. And we always tried to do a couple of covers of Cud songs. And Slack Time is just a high tempo, low budget, early 1990s indie mayhem track that just takes me back to being about 14 years old. No one in the Wellington community will ever have heard of Cud, but they were my favourite band for about 2 or 3 years when I was your age.
Out of all the songs you could have chosen, why does this song particularly stand out to you?
It just puts it. You've seen in the studio here, Harry. It just puts a smile on my face when I listen to it. And I guess when you're older, music has this amazing ability. It can make you dance. Within 2 seconds of listening to a song, it can evoke the most, the strongest of emotions within you. You can put a tear in your eye, it can put a smile on your face. And music has the ability to just place you back 30 years. And I can remember the classrooms at school that I would sit around with my mates and we'd listen on our, we'd have cassette tapes and Walkman and we'd be sharing a headphone each. And we'd be listening to this sort of music and just listening to that, it just takes me back to a moment in time. And actually, I just love Carl Putnam, who's the lead singer of Cud, has the most operatic voice. And just listening to it there, I forget, it's a remarkable voice. And my two final pieces today actually are both from operas. And I just wonder whether Cud and Carl Putnam's vocals sort of bridged that sort of operatic quality to just crazy indie music back to my childhood. It just puts a smile on my face.
Before we get to the said opera pieces, your third song.
Right.
Would you like to tell us about that?
Yeah, 100%. So I will not have any arguments with this whatsoever from any members of the Wellington community, from pupils, from parents, or from teachers or college staff here. The best album of all time, bar none, is The Stone Roses by The Stone Roses. It is the best album of all time because when you buy an album, you guys don't buy albums anymore. You just download a track or it. But back in the day, we would go to HMV or to the local vinyl shop and you'd buy an album and you'd look at the album cover and the artwork and you'd follow the lyrics and many albums were you know, had stories to them. But there was always some songs on every album that you didn't like that much. And you'd put your CD when CDs came out and you'd get to track four and you'd fast forward it because you didn't like. Stone Roses is an album where every single song on that album is 10 out of 10 amazing. The right songs in the right order with the most incredible music, lyrics. And again, that Manchester scene back in the early 1990s, which defined my childhood and would have defined anyone who's in their mid-40s now, it defined them. It was just seminal, absolutely seminal. And the track I've picked is the final track of that album. And it's about 10 minutes long. So if you just press the intro now, we'll just get sort of a minute of it. But it's called I Am the Resurrection, and it is just brilliant. Sorry, Harry, but I I defy anyone to say that that is not a brilliant song and a brilliant album. Just amazing.
To be honest with you, I completely agree. I was looking the song up for a bit of preparation before we came to this.
Yeah.
And I found that the song was actually built off of the Beatles' Taxman guitar riff.
Yeah.
But played in reverse.
Wow. Which Harry, I did not know that.
Yeah, it was such a weird thing. To be honest, would never have guessed. It feels like such an original song. But why this song over? You said all the other songs, 10 out of 10. Why this in particular?
Gosh, I don't know. I think probably because it is the denouement of the album. It's the last track. It is epic. It is so long. When you listen, for people at home, if you listen to that track, it breaks down into the most amazing, funky jam, sort of rock out, sort of 3 or 4 minutes at the end of it that is phenomenal. I think we tried, one of the bands that I was in when I was a TJ, we tried to cover it and did it really badly. And I think probably just going back to what I said before, I can still picture my classroom with Mr. Edwards, who was my class teacher in year 10. And he was a history teacher, history class, and we were upstairs on the first floor in the Royal Grammar School, Newcastle, where I was at school at the time. I can still remember sitting on the desks in there listening to this album, this track with my friends, and us just being blown away in that. You know, I can picture the classroom, the teacher and the people I was with, Harry. And if a song can take me back to that moment in time, then it's got to be worth listening to again.
Our fourth song today is Caronome from Act One of the opera Rigoletto, performed by Joan Sutherland, written by Giuseppe Verdi. Would you like to talk to us a bit about it?
Yeah, 100%. So alongside my sports and my ridiculous music and my academics at school, actually playing music has been a real passion of mine from a very young age. I was very fortunate to be taught brilliantly and ended up playing the drums to grade 8 and the piano and the flute to grade 8. And I was a chorister actually growing up as well. I sang as a cathedral chorister in Newcastle Cathedral Choir. And so I've always been exposed to classical music and the classical tradition and to great singing and great choral works as well. And actually, it probably wasn't until my adult life that I truly developed a passion for researching, listening to, learning more about classical music and opera. And it is a lifetime of passion and interest because there is so much opera and classical music out there, so many composers this genuinely is something that will last a lifetime. It's like a love of literature and reading. You will never, ever be able to read every book in the world. You will never, ever be able to go to every opera. And I sort of said earlier that I love Italian stuff, and Giuseppe Verdi is the absolute archetypal Italian operatic composer, and really played a key and integral part, for those of you who know the history of Italy, in the unification of Italy in the mid-19th century. He was a key figure in that movement. And there's a whole series of operas from his middle years, La Traviata, Il Trovatore, and this opera, Rigoletto, that are just incredible, seminal pieces of work. And Joan Sutherland, the soprano Joan Sutherland, there's lots of argument. Who's the greatest soprano of all time? Is it Maria Callas? Is it one of the modern sopranos like Anna Netrebko? For me, I would vote 100 times out of 100 that Joan Sutherland is the greatest soprano of all time. And the vocal control that she shows in this wonderful aria from the first act of Rigoletto is just breathtakingly stunning. So we might not get to listen to it in this excerpt that we hear now, but if anyone looks up this recording and listens to the full aria, I defy them not to be blown away by the sheer vocal brilliance of this diva, Joan Sutherland.
For those of you that don't know the story of Rigoletto, it's a story of revenge split into three acts created by the operatic composer Giuseppe Verdi, and it was recently adapted into a film. And so the fourth track today we have is Caronome, performed specifically by Joan Sutherland from the opera Rigoletto.
just sublime, Harry. It takes me to a different plane when I listen to that music and her singing.
Her control is, as you said, it is perfect. Her pitch, everything, it just works so well. Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah.
Exactly.
Sorry.
The fifth and final song we have today for you is, again, an opera song. So tell us.
It is, right. So, unfortunately, we couldn't have the full 15 and a half hours of Wagner's Ring Cycle on this show, because I think that would have been slightly boring. But if I had to put my finger on the greatest work of art in the entire history of creation, and that's a big shout, across visual art and dance and music, I would definitely pick the four operas by Richard Wagner that make up the Ring Cycle as the pinnacle of human artistic creation. There are four of them, starting off with the Rheingold, which is only sort of 2.5 hours long, and then building up to the final opera of the Ring Cycle, which is Götterdämmerung, which is sort of 5.5 hours long. And actually, it's thanks to Wagner that we have the saying in modern culture, it's not over until the fat lady sings, because at the end of 15 and a half hours of opera, the main soprano character in the Ring Cycle, who's called Brunhilde, has a decision to make about whether she sacrifices herself and her own life for love and for the redemption of humankind. And she does, and she decides to ride her horse into an inferno, and by doing so, to reset mankind and to give them the opportunity for redemption and for a future. And you have to watch the previous 15 hours and 20 minutes to get to that point of the story. And the final bit of Götterdämmerung, which is widely known as the immolation scene, so it's the bit that Brunhilde sings before sacrificing herself, is off the charts amazing. And one of the things that Wagner does in his operas is he uses leitmotifs. Now, leitmotifs are recurring musical themes that reflect a mood or a character or an item. And whenever you hear these leitmotifs appearing in his music, you know that Brunhilde's coming, or that Wotan is going to appear, or the ring is there, or that this bit of the opera is about the curse, because you hear the curse motif. And you don't pick up on all of this until you listen to these operas hundreds of times. And then suddenly, well, not suddenly, because the more you listen to it, every single time you listen to Wagner's Ring Cycle, you learn more about the plot and about humanity and what he's trying, and the message that he's trying to convey about the human condition. And this last sort of 5-10 minutes brings all of the major leitmotifs, the major themes of the 15 and a half hours of opera together in the most amazing crescendo. And for me, it is the single most incredible achievement of human creation to produce that. And he's pretty problematic, Richard Wagner, Harry. He has some views that are not palatable in 2021. So we have to try and balance this incredible art that he produced with the fact that he was not a particularly pleasant man in many regards. But you can't deny that the immolation scene is one of the great works of art ever. And in fact, the Ring Cycle is full stop.
Thank you.
Oh, my goodness me, that is just incredible. And bless you, I asked for the George Shulte version with a Norwegian soprano called Birgit Nielsen singing, which I'm sure that is that recording. And it is the best recording of the best work of art in all time. Thank you so much, Harry. You've put a massive smile on my face there.
Well, clearly music has played such a key role in your upbringing, in your life. So you speak so passionately about it as well. Clearly means a lot to you. And I can't wait to hear what you have to say about your book and luxury items. So without further ado, I'll pass you over to Max.
Absolutely. Thanks, Harry.
Yeah, so we're going to... Yeah, so this is kind of the stage where you kind of decide what you're going to be taken to this island.
Yes.
So it's an island... where is it? Where was your favourite place?
I think it was going to be Kauai. In Hawaii, in the Pacific Ocean. Yeah.
So if you could choose any luxury, what would you bring to this
island? So if you'd asked me 18 months ago, I probably would have chosen something different, like maybe my turntables and my vinyl collection at home. But Mrs. Dahl bought me a Peloton bike for Christmas, which arrived on December the 16th, Max. And since then, I have been on my Peloton 6 times a week, doing various sort of classes with a whole variety of spinning instructors from around the world. Leanne and Hannah and Olivia and Cody and Bradley. And it has absolutely transformed my life in terms of my physical fitness, well-being, and and I've always known that exercise is a really, really important part of everyone's life. And that's why I'm so proud to be Master of Wellington College, where sport and physical activity and dance and outward bound stuff is taken so seriously. Because if you look after your body, then you look after your mind. So there's a Roman poet, Max, called Juvenal. And in his 10th satire, he talks about a mens sana in corpora sano, which is translated as a healthy mind in a healthy body. And that's widely used now by people as something that we should all aim for. Since December the 16th, Max, I've lost a stone and a half. I am fitter than I have been since probably about 18, 19 years old. My sleep is better. My energy levels are constant throughout the day. And it has transformed my life, as I said before. And I would say to anyone listening, to a parent or a student or a member of staff, who's thinking, but I haven't got time to devote to myself. I am obsessive now about carving out half an hour, 45 minutes every single day to exercise properly. And I hope that I am now a better master, a better colleague, a better husband, a better father, just a better human being, because I'm looking after my physical well-being. And the link between positive physical health and positive mental health is widely accepted through literature and out there. So I don't think that I could live without my daily spinning session with Leanne on my Peloton. So Max, there you go. It's going to be my Peloton.
Yeah, I see. I just don't think I'd be able to do that, because other than the iPad, I just wouldn't be bothered to get on it.
Would you just be sunbathing?
Oh yeah, no. I'd have my little Netflix on top, and then I just, you know, lie. And I'd use the bike for shade. And then maybe the little wheels for a fan, but that's it.
Oh, my goodness me. Yeah. Maybe I should have gone for Netflix. No, I'm sticking with Peloton.
It's on the bike, I think. Yeah. It's kind of, yeah. So how about a book? If you could go to an island.
Yeah.
Hawaii. And you could be on a little sunbeck. What would you be reading?
So there are so many. And I believe you get the works of Shakespeare and the Bible as a given with Desert Island Discs. So look, Max, I'm a classics teacher. I spent my childhood learning Latin and ancient Greek, going to university and studying it. And so it's got to be something from within the classical oeuvre of literature. And I think I would go back to one of Homer's great epics. So Homer, you know, there's debate about whether he was a single poet, or actually whether out of the oral tradition of poetry, which existed in the sort of 8th century BC, which was when we think we date Homer's work, whether he was a collection of poets that sort of told the story of the Trojan War and you know how it started and what happened after it. Regardless of that, he wrote the Iliad, which talks of 10 days at the Trojan War and particularly focuses on two heroes, Achilles and Hector. And I think many classicists would choose the Iliad. I'm actually going to choose the Odyssey, which is his other great work, which charts the return of the Greek hero Odysseus, who's fought at Troy. You'll probably remember from your learning the myths at your previous schools of the Trojan horse and the Greek soldiers hiding in there. And of course, Odysseus, or Ulysses, as he was known in the Roman tradition, was the brains behind that. But the story of the Odyssey is the story of his return to his homeland. He's been away for 10 years fighting at Troy, and it takes him 10 years to get back to Ithaca, to be reunited with the son that he's never really known, because when his son Telemachus was born, Odysseus had just set sail for the Trojan War, and his wife Penelope, his faithful wife, who has spent the last 20 years faithfully waiting for her husband to return. And they live in the palace on Ithaca, and she's got hundreds of suitors, princes from local islands who come and try and win her heart and win her hand in marriage. But she stays faithful to Odysseus. And he goes through all of these travels on his way home, some of which land him on desert islands. So quite appropriate for this. So he gets shipwrecked a couple of times, ends up on an island called Aeaea with Calypso. He ends up on an island called Aegigia as well. And great stories from the classical tradition, like the Cyclops and the Sirens, that, you know, these all come out of the Odyssey. But there's two great themes that really ring true for me within the Odyssey. And it's the sense of homecoming, which in ancient Greek is nostos. And it's the sense of what is your home, which in ancient Greek is oikos. And the Odyssey sort of explores these concepts of what a home is and what homecoming should be and should look like. And actually choosing this book takes me all the way back to where we started in this afternoon's conversation, as we talked about my childhood and we've listened to some music that has taken me on a journey of homecoming back to where I very much begin my life up in Newcastle upon Tyne. So I've always loved the Odyssey. I always will. It's a brilliant tale. I'm going to take Homer's Odyssey with me onto the desert island.
Yeah, I mean, is it like long enough to read?
If I'm going to read it in ancient Greek, it certainly is. Yeah, 24 books, about 24? 500 chapters, about 500 to 600 words. So it's like a sort of it's a poem as well, but it's often translated into a sort of 300-400 page novel in English.
Yeah, so that sounds great. Yeah. So who would you recommend this to? Like, if you could, maybe the schools, Latin, Greek,
classics. Everyone should. I mean, there is a movement, particularly in American universities at the moment, and I totally get it, to diversify the literature that's taught at university and that people are exposed to. And there's a movement within that to stop teaching Shakespeare and stop teaching Dead White Men and the classics, and to teach more contemporary literature that's grown out of social movements. And I totally get that. But for me, it doesn't have to be an either or. You don't have to dispense with Shakespeare and Homer in order to replace it with a new and broader literature base. It's both and for me. So I would recommend reading Homer to everyone, because when you read the Iliad and the Odyssey, there ain't much about the human condition. There ain't much about humanity that isn't covered in those two books. So you can learn a lot about who we are as human beings by reading these works of literature that are almost 3,000 years old.
Yeah, it's quite fascinating. Yeah.
100%.
So out of all the five songs that we've picked, talked about today, if you could bring one on your little stay in this, or not stay, which one would you bring?
Well, it would without a doubt be Wagner's Ring Cycle and the immolation scene from Goethe, Dämmerung and Max. That's because, it's 15 and a half hours long, the Ring Cycle, so that's going to last longer than 3 minutes of Riton. But it goes back to what I said about Homer. In Wagner, you find so much about the human condition reflected to you as a listener. And because of the depth and complexity of Wagner's writing, the librettos that he wrote and the music that he created. As I said before, you can listen to that music 100 times and you will pick something new out of it every single time you listen to it. So the fact that he was slightly problematic, I'm putting to one side, and I'm going to take Götterdämmerung, the immolation scene, and if I could sneak it in, all 15 and a half hours of the Ring Cycle with me to the desert island. Thank you very much, Max.
Yeah, my grandpa is nodding ferociously right now because he's agreeing, because all you hear throughout my grandparents' house is opera.
Excellent.
Because he's up in his attic and he's fixing these clocks and all you hear. And so I think it really sticks by him because he always talks about it, and I think you're really accurate when you say that whenever you listen to it, you really learn something new from it every single time. And
Max, I'd love to meet your granddad.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he'd love to meet you too. So with all these tracks you've chosen, how well do you think you'd be able to survive on this island?
So I think I would be pretty good, actually, at survival on the island. Unbelievably busy, though, being a teacher at a boarding school is, and being the head of a boarding school is. I'm also very good at doing nothing, properly doing nothing. So when I go on holiday with my family and we go and I can switch off. I'm very good at switching off. So I think I would be okay with that. I'm also very good with my own company. I went to boarding school as a child for sixth form, and you're obviously surrounded by friends all of the time, but I'm also equally happy in my own company. I'm not one of those people who's constantly seeking attention. So I think if I've got Shakespeare, the Bible, if I've got Homer, if I've got my Peloton, and if I've got the Ring Cycle with me, and I've got a beach, I think I'm going to be okay.
Yeah. And finally, what would your last words be before we send you on your way?
If I'm leaving Wellington, it's been emotional, but a pleasure and a privilege.
Ooh. Yeah, I guess that works. I think that you'd see that on like a little sculpture, or, you know, I feel like that would be engraved on something. That's...
Maybe if I could do that in ancient Greek, that would be even more impressive, but I can't.
And one of the little squares in the middle of the quad. Yeah,
exactly.
So I think we're at the end of our show. And so all we've got left to do is to say goodbye and farewell on your little island. And thank you so much for coming to speak with us.
Hey, Max, Harry, Ralph, the pleasure has been all mine. Thank you. I genuinely feel humbled that you've reached out to me first. It's been a hoot. Thank you. And I look forward to listening to many, many more.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Cheers, guys.
You.